Support for Agricultural Weather on WILL comes from Busey. With 150 years of agribusiness expertise, Busey's team is committed to providing resources to today's producers. Busey, your dream, our promise.
From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 17th day of December 2018. On this Monday, I'm traveling with the Illinois Farm Economic Summit, so no update of the commodity markets as we're going across the state. You can always catch up with us if you'd like. We'll be in Springfield tomorrow and then Peoria, along with DeKalb and Champaign. Check out the website at FarmDoc Daily to find all the details, or just look in the calendar at willag.org. We still will take walk-ins. Doors open at 7:45 a.m. at each of those events. Now, coming up in this half hour, we'll take a look at precision conservation management. That's one of the presentations made today. Dale Latz will be here. We'll also talk about the commodity markets, of course. Kirk Kimmel will join us. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Mark Russo at Wrist Pulse in Chicago, Illinois, on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, here are some of the numbers as they were trading at about 20 minutes to the hour of 1 o'clock. So, again, no update of the final numbers from the CME Group in Chicago because I'm traveling with the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Just before 1 o'clock, futures in the corn pit were down about a penny for the day. Soybeans were up around 4 to 5 cents. Oil futures, bean oil that is, down 24 cents. And bean meal up a buck 60. Wheat futures were around 4 and a half cents higher for the day. And that would be in the soft red. The hard red was up around 5 and a half cents, and the live cattle futures in Chicago were about 50 cents lower for the most part in the lead option, and on out around 80, 85 cents lower for the day. Feeder cattle are around $2 off, 217 and a half, 252 and a half, and the lean hogs for the day about 92 and a half to a dollar lower for the afternoon. So some of the numbers from the CME Group in Chicago, you can always find those online, and you can visit us as well online. Our address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find most of our programming in its entirety to listen to on demand anytime that you would like. Again, the address there, willag.org. And just a heads up that next week I'll be off as the university is mostly closed for the week, and we will have the closing market report, but nothing from the CME Group. Now, here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. We'll have some clear skies. It'll be sunny, a high of 43 this afternoon, a north-northwest wind at 6 to 10. Tonight, clear skies, a low of 24, north winds at about 5 miles an hour. They'll turn in the evening hours to calm winds, and then that'll drop us again to a 24-degree low and bring us sunny skies tomorrow with a high of 44 degrees on a south-southwest wind at 3 to 7. Tuesday evening, it'll be partly cloudy in the area, a low of 29, south winds at 7. And for Wednesday, partly sunny, a high of 47 degrees, south winds at 7 to 10, gust as high as 16. Wednesday night, a 30% chance of a rain shower. That'll come after midnight, cloudy, a low of 39, and a south wind at 7 to 9. And for Thursday, rain is likely mainly after the noon hour, cloudy, a high of 46 degrees, a south wind 6 to 8. That'll turn to the north in the afternoon for Wednesday. It'll bring with it a chance of precipitation at about 60%. Now, those new amounts could range between a tenth and a quarter of an inch. Again, this is on Thursday afternoon. Thursday evening, rain likely continued through about 2 a.m., then rain, and that'll turn to snow probably. We'll have a low of around 34 degrees. A rain shower, maybe some snow on Friday morning before 10 o'clock. More rain in the afternoon, and mostly cloudy with a high of about 38 degrees. It'll be breezy on Friday. Friday night, mostly cloudy and 27. Saturday, sunny and 39. Saturday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 27 degrees. And more on the weather at the bottom of the half hour.
Support for agricultural weather on WILL comes from Busey. As a Small Business Administration preferred lender, Busey partners with businesses and entrepreneurs who bring vibrancy to the community. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, traveling with the agricultural economist on the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. We're in Mount Vernon today. We'll be in Springfield tomorrow at the Crown Plaza, on Wednesday at the Paradise Hotel and Casino in Peoria, and then Thursday at Ferrandas. That's the Banquet Center in DeKalb. And we'll wrap things up in Champaign at the I Hotel on Friday. If you'd like to join us, you can do that. Walk-ins are welcome. We open our doors at 7:45. The cost is $90, and that does include your noon meal, and that's when we wrap up the day. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to talk about what's been happening in the marketplace on this Monday. And we're doing this just about at the noon hour because, of course, I'm on the road and having to pre-record some things. Thanks so much for being with us, Kurt. I appreciate you taking the time early for me today.
Well, you're quite welcome, Todd.
So at the noon hour, I think the important thing to discuss is that the soybeans are up 7 cents. What's buoying that marketplace?
Well, so several things. Anticipation, we'll see some additional sales announced to China. There's still rumors of upwards of 5 million metric tons total. And the division between old crop, new crop, we'll see that as we move forward here and how that unfolds. Also, export inspections report kind of favorable at the upper end of expectations, so we're shipping out what we sold. Then also, too, we're seeing a situation where the focus is starting to turn to the southern hemisphere on weather. We're developing some dry pockets, and also, too, we've got some wet pockets also, where particularly wheat's being raised in Argentina. So weather's just not as favorable as it was, a few weeks ago. And so that's stimulating a little bit of a buying interest. Also, too, we're kind of entering into late year activity here where we could probably start to see commodity funds square away positions. They were fairly long some beans there. Then last week they liquidated and probably got to where they want to be, and probably seeing that the market held kind of near last week's or the recent lows here last Friday and last night, and just seeing just a little bit of a short covering or buying surface here today, Todd.
When you talk to producers at this point, other than asking when the second payment for a market facilitations program might be released, and I suspect even you get that question, are there things that they're talking to you about as it relates to the tax years and the need for money at this point, or just in general as to old or new crop pricing of corn or soybeans?
Well, basically, the second topic is kind of marking, but the first topic, as you've been mentioned there, is the second payment. They're quite interested in that. But the timing, the next round of marketing to take place, and if you go back and kind of look at the rhythm of the marketplace, it's kind of fell in place where you get a fall low, you trend higher into mid to late December, and here we are. So it's time to consider or take a look at your different options on moving some additional grain in through here. For the most part, guys are kind of where they want to be for the tax year. So if there's going to be another round of grain sales that take place, it's going to be right after the calendar turns 2019. And that's kind of a thing to watch here. I don't think it's going to be a disaster or a second harvest by all means, but there's going to be some pressure to keep a lid on it, because there's estimates that producers are probably only 30 to 40% sold on this old crop, and very little new crop 19's even been looked at.
Are you talking about corn, soybeans, or both when you give me that estimate?
That's a great question to ask. It's heavier beans, of course. I think when we were looking at marketing opportunities late last winter, early spring, the $10 number was taken advantage of. And I think guys were a lot more aggressive on the beans and held onto the corn.
Yeah, this might be an important question to consider, especially for the price of soybeans, because the five-year rolling average, and I was just looking at the season's average cash price Excel spreadsheet that USDA puts together, the five-year rolling average through the month of December, I believe, was about 55% sold, and that would be sales September, October, November, December. And then when you put January in, and I think a lot of those sales are probably pre-sales over those 5 years, but not actually counted until the checks are written by the grain elevator, or the grain elevator doesn't actually tell USDA about them until they've cut the checks. At that point in January, it's 70%. So there's just a tremendous amount of soybeans yet to come into the marketplace, at just as plain old sales. That might make January an interesting month, I suppose.
Yeah, it's definitely a producer psychology or a habit and ability to maybe generate some cash flow needs as we move into this spring. Business bankers and so forth is fairly tight for a lot of producers across the Midwest, just not in certain areas. When you kind of visit with guys, for the most part, $9-plus cash beans out of the fields kind of benchmark to get going on. That's doable. And when you're looking at new crop corn, is $370, $380 cash new crop corn is kind of a benchmark to shoot for, too. So we're not too far away from, getting started on this new crop and kind of putting some price floors in and kind of hope some early sales are wrong in through here, because it's going to be a tough go, and I'm sure you're probably seeing some numbers, discouraging numbers, being talked about at these meetings that you're on here, Todd.
Well, they're longer-term projections. $9 and $4 are the numbers that usually Todd Hubbs is using as the targets for old and new crop sales. Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Well, as you know, I'm traveling all week with the agricultural economist on the Illinois Farm Economics Summits, and you can catch up with us if you'd like. Tomorrow we'll be in Springfield. Our doors open at 7:45, and if you've not registered, walk-ins are certainly welcome. The cost is $90 at the door. That includes all the materials. We go half of a day, and it also includes the meal at the noon hour. Again, we're in Springfield on Tuesday at the Crown Plaza. Then we'll be at the Paradise Casino Hotel on Wednesday. On Thursday, we're at Ferrandas in DeKalb, and in Champaign on Friday at the I Hotel. So you're welcome to come to any of those if you'd like. One of the speakers that's up front is Dale Latz. He now joins us. He's been talking about PCM, or the Precision Conservation Management Program. You've heard about this program on the air several times as part of the Nutrient Loss Reduction podcast that I produce, or maybe you've seen it on the website. If you just search Nutrient Loss Reduction podcast, you'll find a whole series of programming on PCM, or Precision Conservation Management. As a background, and we'll get into some of the numbers with Dale, but as a background, started with Illinois Corn Growers Association. It includes the FBFM, or Farm Business Management Association in the state, and of course the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. Dale, along with Gary Schnitke, have been doing a lot of the data work here. A good portion of this came on the idea that regulation might come for nutrient loss, and that there needed to be some way to maybe put that off or to move producers into a position where they were doing more conservation management to keep nutrients in place. Dale, what did you tell producers today about some takeaways that you've learned since the 2015 season, and I think that's when you started to collect some data. And maybe we should talk about where that data is collected from to begin with, and how many farms, those sorts of things.
Right. The PCM program started in, I believe, 2016, but they actually went back and collected data for the 2015 crop year. So right now we have data for 2015, 16, and 17. The 18 data will be, it's pretty well there, but we haven't received the data yet to do any analysis. The data comes up now. There's around 200 farms or more enrolled. It grows every year as they kind of expand the area that they cover. Currently, it's in 16 counties in Central Illinois, Central and East Central Illinois. And those farmers that are enrolled in the program get assistance from the PCM people that help them put in field-level data into the program that we then analyze and try to do some economic analysis, you know, based on the amount of tillage operations they do and the amount of nutrients that are applied.
Yeah, this isn't 20,000 acres and 200 farms. This is 200,000 acres.
Right. Right now, there's over the 3 years, 200,000 acres, and I believe 1,800 fields in the program or in the data set that we have. So it's a large group. It's just not a small sample. And as we get more farms, more fields, I should say, in more years, we're going to be more comfortable, you know, with some of the conclusions that we get out of the data.
So I think there are a couple of takeaways that you talked about with the producers here at the Illinois Farm Economic Summit in Mount Vernon, and that you'll be telling them the rest of the week. What are they?
Two of the areas we looked at was tillage and nitrogen application amounts and methods. On the tillage side, we categorize these fields and the amount of tillage they did. And one of the things that the farmer and the specialists enter are the amount of their field, every trip that goes over the field. So as you looked at the number of field operations, we tried to identify what level of tillage is needed to be, say, most profitable. Obviously, the more tillage, the more cost you have in it. And as we looked at that, we did see that there's probably a level of tillage being done that maybe a farmer can look at and say, do I really need to do that? Because some of our highest yields and highest returns were at levels that didn't have the most tillage being done. So that begs the question, can I look at the operation? Can I look at my operation? And is there a tillage operation I'm doing that maybe I can cut back on and save some money? On the nitrogen side, the same kind of analysis there. We looked at the timing of nitrogen, fall, spring, split application, and so forth, and also the level of the amount of nitrogen applied. And then we, based on those different criteria, looked at the profitability yields and the profitability or net return on these fields. And again, it seemed like there's probably a level that farmers can look at and maybe, again, think about doing some testing on maybe applying a little less nitrogen and see if there's not any economic loss in their situation, again, to save some dollars. And that obviously helps two standpoints. One, just less nitrogen being applied from an environmental standpoint, but also increasing the bottom line for the farmer.
Well, let's divide this into the acreage itself by crop. So starting with soybeans, when producers are going to plant soybeans, normally it would be into, I would think, corn stubble. How many passes do they normally do in this group? And what do the numbers show you about the number pat that and whether it's worthwhile or not?
Sure. As we look, and fortunately we are seeing right now, as you look at fields going into soybeans, which in most operations would probably be previously a corn field, actually about half or a little less than half are no-till operations right now, which means they're just planting right into the soybeans or into the corn stalks, which is good. Then we have that a one pass, which means planting plus one tillage operation, two pass, planting plus two tillage operations, and so forth. The most profitable level, or the highest yield we did see, was the one pass. So that would be a planting or a tillage operation and then planting. But as we did the two and looked at the two and two plus passes, the average yield over those 3 years of the data was a little below the one pass operation, and the returns were a little below. So again, that kind of begs the question, do we need that second or third pass? Are we just kind of spending some money on machinery operations we don't need to do? And there might be situations or fields or whatever that needs to be done, but at least we kind of raise the question to the farmer, is that really needed?
So mostly no-till in the bulk of the fields that you looked at of those 1,800 and however many were going into soybeans, mostly no-tilling into corn stalks. That was a little different when you turned around and said, well, what does the corn acreage look like and how many passes are people using there?
Right. And again, the previous crop in most situations would be soybeans. So you had soybean stubble. We had 124 farms or fields, I should say, that were no-till and the same amount of strip-till, double that for one pass. And actually the largest amount was two passes. So, again, these would have been ground going in the corn stalks, which would previously be soybean stubble. So a two-pass system would be an operation most likely done in the fall, a chisel or disking of the soybean stubble, and then a field cultivating in the spring, and then a planting operation. Again, the most profitable actually was the strip-till and the one-pass in terms of ground going into corn that previously, in most instances, had been soybeans. So, again, even though the majority of the fields used a two-pass system, that was basically not the most profitable operation. The one pass and the strip till were the most profitable operations in this analysis anyway, from that standpoint. Again, you know, there's certain reasons, and we do kind of apply the custom rate guides to these operations that they do. But it looks to, again, one needs to analyze, are those extra passes actually adding anything to the bottom line of the operation?
I know you don't tease this out, so I'm going to make a guess that they're trying to control weeds going in the fall when they go back into corn, and that's why they're doing the tillage passes at all, because they're not clearly doing that in the soybeans, and it must be easier to just use Roundup during the soybeans. But some of that makes some sense to me. Some of it doesn't.
Yes, and you know, we're just looking at the bottom line numbers here, but that doesn't mean there's a reason that some of these things are being done. You know, we don't have all those reasons in the data to kind of ferret that all out. Anyway, that would take some additional analysis.
Okay, so now let's stay with corn. On nitrogen management, what did you show about, and this would be part of the world where fall application of nitrogen could be easily enough be done. What did you see in terms of total pounds of N that were put on, and maybe what the differences between fall application, spring application, split applications look like?
Sure. And in this area, again, as we think about where these fields were at, which were basically in East Central and Central Illinois, there is a lot of fall application of anhydrous done if the weather permits. This fall actually wasn't one of those years that permitted a lot of that. But that was the majority of the fields did have that type of application, that being fall applied anhydrous most likely. The next most common one was pre-plant in the spring. So that would basically be a 28 or a 30%, 32% liquid solution being applied probably with a pesticide prior to planting. That was the second most common one. Then we did see mostly side dress, and then we are seeing what we call 50-50 pre-plant, which means some nitrogen putting on before planting, usually in the spring, probably some liquid applied, and then coming back and side dressing, you know, with a 28 to 32% solution after the planting or after the corn is just barely up. And we are seeing, and we hear a lot about split application of nitrogen as a way to kind of maybe lower nitrogen usage to some extent, but also applying it at a time that the corn crop needs it or can benefit the most. And we did see from a profitability standpoint that actually the 50-50 pre-plant yielded the highest net return and actually had the highest three-year average corn yield. Those fields averaged 217 bushel an acre compared to 208 and 207 for the pre-plant and the side dress. And actually the fall applied had the lowest average yield over the 3 years, 204 bushel, still a really good yield, but 204. And obviously they also had the higher amount of nitrogen applied, which a lot of people that do apply in the fall probably apply a little more because they know there's going to potentially be some loss in that as they apply in the fall. And thus, lower yields, more N applied, and they had the lowest net return compared to the other three methods that we had kind of categorized that by. Again, we're not talking about huge numbers, but it does point out that we may be doing some practices or amount of N being applied that we potentially need to rethink about a little bit and maybe cut back or look at what we're doing to save some dollars and not have any yield loss.
Dale, thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
Dale Latz is traveling with us on the Illinois Farm Economics Summit. If you'd like to see his presentation, you can join us in Mount Vernon. Well, Dale Latz is traveling with us on the Illinois Farm Economics Summit. If you'd like to see his presentation and that of all of the rest of the agricultural economists along with a policy specialist, you can do that in Springfield tomorrow. And Peoria Wednesday, Thursday in DeKalb, and we'll be back in Champaign on Friday. All the details are up on my website at willag.org. Look for the calendar link.
It's National Maple Syrup Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1843, Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol was published. In 1857, Sir Francis Beaufort died. He invented the wind force scale. Officially adopted by the British Admiralty in 1838, it used numbers 0 to 12 to designate calm, light air, light breeze, gentle breeze, moderate breeze, fresh breeze, strong breeze, moderate gale, fresh gale, strong gale, whole gale, storm, and hurricane. In 1870, Bert Benjamin was born. An American inventor, he is responsible for the Farmall tractor and the power takeoff system on agricultural tractors. The Farmall was the first tractor that could plow and cultivate row crops. Benjamin, a graduate from Iowa State College, held 140 patents, ranging from a corn picker to a corn shredder to a corn binder. He spent nearly 40 years with the International Harvester Company. In 1892, George Brayton died. An American engineer, he invented the first commercial gas internal combustion engine. In 1903, powered human flight was achieved by the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. And in 1940, corn silk was recorded by Guy Lombardo and his Royal Canadians. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason on the road today in Mount Vernon with the Illinois Farm Economic Summit. You can join us the rest of the week. We start at 7:45 a.m. Walk-ins are welcome. We'll be in Springfield, Peoria, DeKalb, and then Champaign. All the details are on our website. Look for the calendar link at willag.org. We're now joined by Mark Russo. He is a Risk Pulse in Chicago. Looks, Mark, like it'll be a pretty good week for me to be traveling this week in the state of Illinois. Kind of nice out, I think.
Well, Todd, yeah, we've certainly seen a moderation in temperatures here across the central U.S., and that looks to continue throughout all of this week and actually into the start of next week as well. So from now, basically through the Christmas holiday, talking about temperatures well above normal, really something we haven't seen all the way since back early October, even in September. And from a storminess standpoint, yeah, really no sign of any kind of significant winter storms here on the way, at least over the next week to 10 days. It's going to be a little bit of rainfall here coming up, but from a travel disruptor snow event, nothing in the way of any major storm systems from now through Christmas.
Hey, one thing about snow coverage across the western United States, and I don't know whether you've looked at this or not, are they on track at this point? Because that often has an impact later in the season for many of those western growing areas.
Yeah, with the plains, we've seen pretty active conditions. In fact, while we've been on the colder side in recent weeks across much of the central and eastern U.S., the plains has been quite stormy, especially the southern areas of the plains, which is actually pretty typical with an El Nino event going on. So areas of Nebraska, Kansas, even down through the Texas Panhandle has received normal to even above normal precip totals, and that's keeping or, making overall soil moisture conditions in good shape. For winter wheat, really the main issue of late has been just the crop has gone into winter dormancy. Some areas here with very limited growing degree days, although that's actually changing a little bit now with some of this December warmth that we're seeing.
Turn your attention to South America. They have had some dryness that's developed. Do you see that abating?
We do see that abating here, Todd, especially in areas of Paraná and Mato Grosso do Sul, where that dryness has been talked about more and certainly some developing concern if it were to last for an extended period of time. Bottom line is that we do not see that lasting, and we see a very good setup for rains in Paraná and Mato Grosso do Sul coming up this weekend and much of next week as well, and that should improve the overall soil moisture situation in those driest areas.
And hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Yeah, you're welcome, Todd.
That is Mark Russo. He's with Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Monday afternoon. Do check out the Farm Doc Daily website. You'll find all the details of the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Walk-ins are welcome. The cost is $90 at the door. That includes your meal at the noon hour, and we go through only the noon hour. We start at 7:45 for registration if you've not done that yet. We'll be in Springfield tomorrow at the Crown Plaza at the Casino Hotel, that is, the Paradise in Peoria, on Wednesday in DeKalb at Ferrandis, that's the Banquet Center downtown, and then on Thursday, and then at the iHotel on Champaign on Friday. I'm Todd Gleason.